got three after. First,
I think we're good to start.
yeah, I was going to go ahead and start. So first of all, it's so great to see everyone on this bright, sunny election day. So happy election day. For those of, oh, I see Bob showing his I voted sticker. I did early voting, so I did mine too. Oh, and I see Brian's, I think, as well. I did mine 2 weeks ago. So those who have not yet voted, I hope you take some time this afternoon and this evening before the polls close to vote. A very one of the wonderful privileges we have in this country. So hope everyone gets a chance to do that. I am really excited to be getting our group together and looking forward to, boy, what's been a busy fall, and I think what is going to be a busy winter. For my president's report, I'm going to try to go through things pretty quickly, just because I know we have our training and I don't want to hold us up. But we've had just a really busy and wonderful fall. And I encourage Charles, Chad, anyone who attended any of these events that would like to chime in to please do so. It really has been a great kickoff to our year, all the activities that we've been having this fall. One of the exciting things is that we in DC, our DC organization, was able to host some very high profile and very important events for the legal profession. We hosted the ABA National Conference for Lawyer Assistance Programs at the Omni Shoreham shortly after our September board meeting, which was just a great event. Our DC Bar Legal Assistance Program staff and some of the attorney members of the committee presented. I gave opening remarks. It was just a wonderful opportunity for that group to get together for the first time in several years. And after a period of time that was so hard on attorneys' mental health connections. So it was just a great opportunity to bring that group that cares so much and does so much for those issues together. And I think Bob will talk about this as well. We hosted at our DC Bar headquarters the International Institute of Law Association Chief Executives. It was absolutely fabulous to have to showcase our wonderful DC Bar headquarters. We started off the evening before with a reception, and Chad and Charles and I were there, as well as our DC Bar staff, Bob and Darren and Adam. And then the program started the next day. I gave welcoming remarks, and then I was ushered out the door because they like to talk about things without the board members and so forth being present. But from what I understand from Bob, it was just a wonderful opportunity to exchange ideas and talk about the issues that are common to bar associations across the world. And it was just a great opportunity, as I say, to showcase our DC Bar staff and our wonderful headquarters. Chad and Charles and Bob and Darren and I also had an opportunity to visit New York City at the end of September for the Mid-Atlantic Bar Conference. It was a wonderful, and this is a conference that's composed of New York. Let's see if I forget one. DC, New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and New Jersey. And I think that's all of us. Interestingly, we are the only integrated bar in that group. The others are voluntary. So some of our issues we approach from a little different point of view, yet there are common ones, even within our differences. And it was a great opportunity for this group to get together, talk about issues that we are confronting within, across our bar associations within them, and just a great chance to get together. I mean, I think that's one of the themes that I'll be echoing throughout this fall. It is just wonderful to get together in person and see people and connect. And we also had tons of fun. We had a cruise around the East River and the Hudson River, around the tip of Manhattan, which was actually absolutely fabulous. And we also were able to see a Broadway show. So it was a great time to bond and exchange ideas as well. Again, theme, it's been a busy fall. I think it's great. Our bar associations, our legal services organizations, we're all excited to get back out and have our programs and connect and meet people. I'll just highlight some of the many events and many organizations that Charles and Chad, and I know some of our other board members, have attended. Women's Bar. We had our Stars of the Bar event at the DC Bar headquarters. Was a fabulous event. The Asian Pacific American Bar Association, the Hispanic Bar Association, the South Asian Bar Association, and the Washington Foreign Law Society all had their big annual awards gala dinners this fall, and various of us attended. I want to give a special shout out to Roger and Cheyenne, who attended the Washington Foreign Law Society event, because it coincided exactly with when we were up in New York for the Mid-Atlantic Bar Conference. So neither Charles Chad nor I could go. And I know they very much appreciated having representation. We've also been able to attend Washington Bar Association events, Council for Court Excellence events. The communities had a wonderful DEIA event that many of you, thank you for attending, that talked about, you know, corporate law and how corporations are looking at the DEIA space and maybe not always walking the talk that they talk, but how we can improve that. So I think the theme from all of these events is people were so excited to see us. We had a wonderful reception. We were often asked, members of the board were often asked to bring greetings. We were introduced. We were thanked for being there. So I think the voluntary bars and the communities really, really appreciate when leaders of our integrated bar show up and care and participate in their events. So hopefully we can continue that. We kind of capped off a marquee event that we had at the ceremonial courthouse at the DC Court of Appeals with our joint DC Bar Association of DC 150 celebration. Many of you here on our Zoom were there. Thank you so much for coming. It was a fabulous event. We had a terrific panel composed of DC Bar past presidents, BADC past presidents. It was moderated by Anna Maria Stord, who is a DC Bar and BADC past president. Judge Anna Blackburn Rigsby was there. She gave wonderful opening and closing remarks, just tying together the history of these two amazing organizations and how we are looking forward to doing more good in our community in the future. So it was just a really, really wonderful, fun event. And it doesn't stop there. We have a number of upcoming events before we hit kind of the Christmas break. I'll mention a couple of them here. We have an upcoming joint Women's Bar Association, DC Bar Arts, Entertainment, Media, and Sports Law Community Program. It will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of Title IX. It will be at the DC Bar headquarters next Tuesday evening. So if anyone is interested in coming, it's convenient. And it's just going to be a wonderful panel. We have a number of folks speaking who have very close ties to Title IX and women's sports. We have the Vice President and General Counsel of the National Women's Law Center as a speaker, a woman partner at Bailey Glasser who litigates Title IX cases against universities and colleges will be one of our speakers. A partner at Mayor Brown, who was instrumental in the settlement that was reached between the national women's soccer team and the soccer, U.S. soccer, will be speaking. And the moderator is going to be the founder of a group called Inclusion Playbook that focuses on sports and justice in communities and advancing women. So it should be a great panel. If you have a chance, we'd love to have you stop by.
Is our own two sport Division I athlete president not moderating that panel? I'm just curious.
Because there are better and more qualified people to do that than I am. I
will very be modest. There.
But it should be a lot of fun. And we've got a great turnout. We've got some terrific sponsors. And so we'd love to see as many of you as can be there. Join us. So that would be great. We also have next week is a busy week. The DC Bar Foundation, this week is busy too. The DC Bar Foundation has their fall reception tomorrow. It's at PNC Place on 17th Street. So I know a couple of us, Charles and I, are planning to be there to support our sibling organization and all the great work that they do. And I was looking, and I don't know if I saw Karen Newton Cole, but it's like highlight Karen coming. Hey.
I'm here.
And feel free to elaborate on these events, but I just want to make sure everyone knows that Neighborhood Legal Services is having their Jazz for Justice fundraiser next week. November 16th at the DC Bar headquarters. So we're very excited, Karen, that you chose to celebrate at the DC Bar headquarters and again, showcase our great space. And then the Washington Council of Lawyers, after the Thanksgiving break on Thursday, December 1st at Arnold and Porter, are having their pro bono awards ceremony. And I want to congratulate Karen. She is going to be honored with their President's Award for Public Service. So again, if you can come out and support Karen and Washington Council of Lawyers, that would be awesome. Karen, do you want to say a few words about either event?
Well, I just in terms of Jazz for Justice, we would welcome all of you to come to Jazz for Justice. We are honoring Jeffrey Halston, who is the Vice President and General Manager at Universal Music Group. And Jeffrey hails from back in the old days from Covington. He worked at Covington and Burling. And he was a rotating associate at NLSP in the 90s. So I just want to say, folks, please come out. It's a wonderful event. Plenty of jazz, good singing, and just a fun time for all. And this will be the third time that we've been at the DC Bar building. The only times we weren't there were last year and the year before at the beginning of the pandemic. We really loved the space. The space is just absolutely incredible. And we welcome all of you. So just let me know and we'll get you in there.
Thank you, Karen. And again, congratulations on this really, really well-deserved award. We are so proud of you and for everything that you do for our DC community. So thank you. And then just a few more events. The UDC Law Gala, they're celebrating 50 years at UDC, providing legal education for our community. Next Thursday, November 17th at the UDC Student Center. And I know Darren and Charles and I are gonna go there to represent the DC Bar and looking forward to a wonderful event. And then on Saturday, December 3rd, the Bar Association of DC is having their 150th anniversary banquet at the Capitol Hilton. And Charles and I are going to go and represent the DC Bar. And then looking kind of way ahead into the spring, we have our Bench Bar Conference. And this is the conference that we do every other year with the courts. It will be held Friday, April 28th. Our theme is Home Rule in DC at 50, looking back and looking forward. And as you may recall, there is a planning group that is formed with some of the judges on the court and some of our DC Bar leadership. The judges kind of take the lead on the morning, the plenary part of the session. The DC Bar takes the lead on the breakout sessions in the afternoon. And the programs office does a great job as always. Proposals were due for the afternoon session, and I understand we've had just a plethora of really good programs for the afternoon. So we're looking forward to just a really, really terrific bar bench conference in April. And so I hope everyone joins us. And that kind of exhausts my events. If I've forgotten anything that someone wants to highlight before I just touch on a couple other things, please jump in, let me know. All right. Well, thank you for letting me kind of go through that list. But I think it's important to know that, you know, people are back. They're very excited about being together. And we really appreciate it when any of our Board of Governors can come out and attend any events that our communities, voluntary bars, or legal services organizations host. They really enjoy seeing us, and it means a lot to them to have us present and supporting them. So now I'll just turn to a couple other things that we've been working on. The DEI task force that the board approved earlier held its first meeting last Wednesday. Esther Lim and Ben Wilson are our co-chairs of the task force. They led a terrific brainstorming session about issues of importance that we should focus on, upcoming ideas we may want to consider. It will be probably a challenge for the task force to kind of focus and narrow down what can we do that's actionable, measurable, and, you know, that doesn't spread us too thin. The task force, I think everyone recognizes that this is a marathon, not a sprint. So this will not be a one and done type of endeavor. And I think everyone in the room at that meeting has so much energy and excitement and really cares about those issues that I'm very excited about where we will go from here. The task force is actually gonna heighten the frequency of its meetings through the end of the year in order to kind of figure out where we might focus. And likely we'll get some more people involved, form some working groups to talk about different or to focus on different areas. So definitely we will be reaching out and involving more folks. So I know many folks on the board expressed an interest in being involved. And we couldn't accommodate that at that point in time, but there will be opportunities as we move forward and we fill out these working groups. So thank you for those that expressed interest, and we will definitely get you involved. And I also want to give a huge shout out to our DCBAR staff that's helping out with this effort, Carla Friedenberg and Adriana Goh Santos. They have been terrific and pulling up resources for us and making sure that we kind of stay focused and stay in a timely manner so that we can really make some progress this year on that. Next, our young lawyers community, which this group approved as well. It went to the Communities Committee at their first meeting of this year, and they have approved setting up a young lawyers community. So we are currently in the process of pulling together a small working group that will focus on planning for the rollout for this new community officially launch for the 2023-2024 bar year. But all this year, we will be focusing on what's the governance, who's involved, how do we reach out, and what's our programming. So that is a very exciting ongoing project. And again, thanks to Pam Robinson, who's heading our communities, for really pulling this together and helping us move forward. And Darren as well, who was really where is Darren? I can't see him on my screen, but Darren was just wonderful and embracing.
I'm here.
Oh, thanks, Darren.
You're being modest again, Ellen. This is all you.
No. When we came up with this idea, Darren was all on top of it, and Bob, that this is such a great opportunity for us to really make an impact and provide a real service to our young lawyers that isn't currently there in our community in collaboration with the BADC. Next, we kicked off we hold the quarterly meetings with our chief judges. We've kind of decided this year to do kind of standard quarterly meetings with Chief Judge Blackburn Rigsby and Chief Judge Josie Herring. So these have been, our first two have been great, and it's been a great conversation with the judges. They've focused on their issues at the top of their mind, judicial vacancies, continuing to make sure that access to justice provisions and the proposals and the implementation they have during the pandemic moves forward and transitions as we all get back in person. They are very excited about our young lawyers community and about our DEIA task force, and we look forward to kind of partnering with them on those issues as we move forward. And then finally, just a little bit on pro bono. We have been involved in some informal conversations with the Access to Justice Commission and their working group to develop a culture of philanthropy focused on individual giving from attorneys, kind of focusing on our professional rules of responsibility 6.1, which in the comments talks not only about donating your pro bono hours or accepting appointments from the court to represent folks who can't otherwise pay for an attorney. There's also a provision in there that encourages attorneys to make monetary contributions, and actually has an amount, $750 or the lesser of 1% of your salary in there. So the Access to Justice Commission is trying to focus on how do we raise the profile of that. I think their goal will be ultimately to develop a toolkit so that law firms and organizations can kind of weave that into their training for young associates. And we certainly at the bar have talked to them about bringing those concepts into our mandatory course, our Patent Leadership Academy, and in our young lawyers community curriculum as we build that out. So that's kind of what's been on tap. Sorry that took a little longer than I thought, but I wanted to share with you kind of what's been going on since we did have kind of a fairly long break between our September meeting and this meeting. And I look forward to seeing everyone next month. So we won't have as long of a break on December 13th in person for our joint, the meeting where we sit jointly as the Board of Governors of the DC Bar and the Board of Directors of the Pro Bono Center. So that's it for my president's report. We have a business meeting, relatively short, I would think. And then we have some important training that June and Irom are going to take us through for board governance. So the first item of business I'd like to turn to is our consent agenda. Do I have a motion to, or would anyone make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
I hear. I'm going to take
second.
Yes, I saw Andrew as a second. I'll take the motion and the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That passes. All right. And Bob, I'm going to pass it right off to you for the CEO's report. Thank you.
Thanks. Operations, we're doing well. As you heard from Ellen, we've got lots of stuff going on in the building, certainly more than we have had over the past couple of years. So it's great to ramp up. And there have been a number of days where we've had a pretty large chunk of staff in the building as well. Although they do have a flexible schedule based on their teams, they can work either in the building or at home, but obviously we're there to staff in-person events. As Ellen mentioned also, we hosted the ILACE meeting October 25th through the 28th. And it was kind of a big deal. ILACE is comprised of the Bar Association executives, so like CEOs, EDs, secretaries general, from bar associations around the world, including the Law Society of England and Wales, the Law Society of Hong Kong, and the bar associations of Namibia, Zimbabwe, Japan, Ireland, and Tasmania, which is where the meeting is going to be next year, by the way, in Tasmania. During the meeting, we actually discussed a wide range of topics, including like how to maintain innovation in a law society post-pandemic, how to build a value proposition when you've got really diverse membership, and importantly, the role of bar associations in combating anti-lawyer and anti-judicial activism and preserving the rule of law. So we came away with a lot of great ideas. Ellen did do the welcoming remarks, and I did throw her right out of the room because we have a executive-only rule when it comes to these conferences so that people can talk freely. They were incredibly impressed with the facility. I mean, the building, of course, is beautiful, but more particularly, we conducted a mock hybrid board meeting for them to show them what we do. And we used the Peyton Room. We had some folks in the room and some folks out. We thought it was just going to be, oh, that's kind of nice. No, they dug in for a good half hour, 40 minutes of questioning about how we did it, what we tried, and the rest. So it was good to see that we could partner with our bars around the world and in the rest of the country. And we're seen as sort of a leader in all this. Big shout out to the facilities group, Kevin, Akil, and Delonte in particular, who were there the entire time. And of course, Stacy and Ashley with meeting and event planning, because they were fabulous, just simply fabulous. When we met in September, you will recall that we explained that the Legal Ethics Committee was seeking to file a brief in a disciplinary matter. The name of the matter was In Re Pons, on a limited issue of whether Rule 1.15 subsection E requires a writing. The DCCA had a panel decision. We didn't care so much about the disciplinary outcome, but its interpretation of that rule was at odds with an opinion that the Legal Ethics Committee had issued previously. So the committee requested the ability to go ahead, ask the court to ask it, because of the way that the process works, if it could submit a brief. And after our meeting in September, the court approved the filing of the brief. The brief has been filed. There is no decision yet about whether the court will take it either make a rehearing or a rehearing en banc, but we'll keep you informed as that goes forward. I know it's hard to believe, but we are actually midway through the second quarter of our fiscal year, which means that we're beginning the process of calling for nominations for the spring elections for officers and members of the Board of Governors, as well as ABA delegates. So the nominations committee, or NomCom, as we call it, has already begun its work, and it's beginning to go ahead and recruit candidates. You probably already saw some of our push for a call for nominations, and you're going to be seeing a lot of it in the weeks to come in email, social media, the Washington Lawyer, Smart Brief, and other media channels. We're going to reach out directly to the communities, to voluntary bars, legal services providers, our committees, and other constituencies to make sure that they know that we're actively seeking candidates. Just as a reminder, though, the new bylaws took effect on July 1st, and that created a new position of treasurer-elect, who's now in a three-year cycle. Treasurer-elect, year one, treasurer, year two, and then a member of the Board of Governors, year three. But we have a transitional year this year because Sean is serving as a one-year treasurer currently. So next year, when the elections happen in the spring, we're going to elect both a treasurer and a treasurer-elect so we could start the cycle going. Also, the position of secretary is no longer elected independently. It's going to be an appointed position, one-year appointment, and Charles will do that next year when he becomes president. A number of you, board members and officers, are finishing up your term, either because you have a one-year term or because it's the end of your first three-year term. If you're interested in running again for any position, we'd ask that you let us know by December 1st. And I'm asking this on behalf of the nominations committee because that will help inform their recruiting efforts and, you know, what the pool is going to look like. So there's a new form that we're using. It's online to fill out. So we would ask you just to fill it out. And we already have all your biographical stuff. But if you would just let us know which position you're running for, if you are going to run for another position on the board, if you could just do so by December 1st, that would be great. And of course, as members of the Board of Governors, it's incumbent on you and us, right? The staff has a role, the board has a role to be active in that recruitment process. You have great networks. You know who the leaders are. You're connected to voluntary bars and other organizations where you have leaders and people who really will well serve the bar. You know the bar better than, you know, the vast majority of other DC bar members. So we're asking for your help recruiting top-notch candidates. Ellen already reminded you of the board meeting, which is going to be in person on December 13th. Obviously, we will have a hybrid option available because we have some people who definitely could not be there, but we're hoping to see as many of you as humanly possible in the building on December 13th. Also, if you happen to be around on December 6th from 1 to 3, it's when the DC Bar staff holiday party is going to take place, but we would love to have all of you join us as well. Finally, I try to do a member benefit highlight each one of these meetings, because that way when a DC bar member says to you, I don't get anything from my dues or my license fees, you can remind them of all the great services they get, like the Legal Ethics Hotline and ACAT and Law Practice Management and Member Connection Suite and the Lawyer's Assistance Program, just to name a few. We also have a lot of affinity programs, including LawPay, which is an online payment solution for lawyers. It's integrated with all these legal software products. More than 50,000 law firms use it. 150,000 legal professionals use it. And the DC bar members get a year with no service charge, or first year with no service charge at all. So it's got lots of great things and allows you to manage your accounts compliant with ABA rules and IOLTA rules and everything else. But so again, when your members say, hey, what do I get from my license fees? Like, well, you get a lot of great services directly from the bar and a lot of good affinity programs like LawPay, which also sponsors the National Association of Bar Executives, the National Conference of Bar Presidents. They care very much about bar associations as well as law firms and law practices. All right. And with that, if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I will toss it back to our president.
Thanks, Bob. Any questions for Bob or me for that matter? I kind of didn't give you an opportunity to ask me any questions. All right. Well, Bob, thank you for everything and your staff. I do want to encourage folks, if you are available for the staff holiday party, I know they would appreciate seeing members of the Board of Governors there. I am planning to be there. I know Chad appreciates and knows this more than I, but this year, I really understand how much our staff does to make sure that our events happen without a hitch, that our programs continue, that so much is going on that could not happen without our staff. So I know they'd appreciate it if you could even pop in to say a happy holiday and a thank you so much for all the great work that they do. All right. And I see next we have Mark Salzberg with us. Mark is
good morning.
Our, good Good morning, Mark. Thank you for joining us this morning. Mark is going to deliver the report of the Regulations, Rules, and Board Procedures Committee. This will not be a new topic for most of you. As you remember, we voted last year to amend our DC Bar bylaws. As Bob mentioned, you know, we made a change to our officers on the DC Bar. And so now what the Regs Rules Committee has been doing has been going through the rules from the Court of Appeals and recommending changes to those as set forth in the memo that Mark has graciously provided to us from his committee. So this meeting, just so you know, is informational only. There will be no vote at this meeting, but the next meeting, our December meeting, is when we will vote on these recommendations. And with that, Mark, I will kick it to you. Thank you.
Let me start off by apologizing what's about to happen, because we're having some work done in the house and the dogs are sitting right underneath me and they will start barking. So I apologize in advance. But as Ellen said, the Rules Committee previously proposed revisions to the bylaws and a membership manual. These were approved back in April of this year. So we have now gone through and we are proposing amendments to the DC or the District of Columbia Court of Appeals rules governing the District of Columbia Bar, just called the rules. The primary purpose of this project is to minimize redundancy, to ensure consistency between the various documents that govern us, those being the rules, the bylaws, and the membership manual. And this is consistent with the committee's overall approach that we started this project about a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit longer, which was to ensure that matters are addressed in the proper place, be it in the bylaws, be it in the rules, and to minimize chances of any inconsistencies between those documents. As Ellen said, we're not asking the Board of Governors, to approve the amendments to the rules today. This is just really an introductory presentation to summarize the proposed amendments. The amendments were detailed in the memorandum that was submitted dated today. It was submitted last week, along with the attachments. And I would point the Board of Governors to the proposed amendments. The redline version is probably the easiest one to look at to see what changes that we're suggesting. We're suggesting changes to the majority of the rules. About six have not, there are no amendments to six rules, but there are some amendments to the other rules. Most of those amendments are editorial, just making sure we're using the correct term that comes from the bylaws and the membership manual. And also we've proposed to take out some matters that are more properly addressed in either the bylaws or the membership manual and to take them out of the rules. I'm happy to walk the board through the proposed amendments at this time, or to the extent that anyone has any specific questions or questions about any specific rules changes that we're proposing at this time, whatever the board deems the best use of their time.
What would folks like? Adam, do you have a suggestion walking through or entertaining questions?
I'd invite the board to ask any questions. I suspect people have spent some time with this and they'll have some more time going through it, but it's really, if there's a strong feeling among the board members, I defer to that.
Okay, thank you, Adam. How about we start with, are there any questions for Mark on the materials or anything based on the presentation so far today? Karen, I see Diane, yes.
Yes.
Thanks. There was obviously a lot of work that went into this. So I just had a question. It's not criticism or anything. It's Article 4 about the Board of Governors. And I'm in the redline version. I wish I could tell you what page. It's 9 of 20. There's a change that talked about three non-voting public members. It's section 4.01b. And it says they can't be members of the bar. And I just noticed a nuance that said, who shall not have been admitted to practice law in any jurisdiction. And I don't know the reason why, but I did wonder, like, how come they can never have been a lawyer? I understand if it can't be a current lawyer, but like if someone kind of handed in their law license 10 years ago and doesn't consider themselves and is not a licensed practicing lawyer, this would seem to eliminate them. I just want to know the rationale for it. I'm sure there is one. I just don't know it.
Can I ask a very quick question? Are you looking at Rule 4, the Board of Governors, and the rules, or are you looking at the bylaws?
It is in the bylaws. I'm so sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'd have to go back to the bylaws. I mean, Diane, I'd be happy to go back and look at those. Those were the ones that we approved, or the Board of Governors approved back in April. I'd be happy to go back and we could talk about that at the next meeting. I can give you a specific answer. I don't have the bylaws in front of me at this point.
Okay. And I'm sorry. I mean, maybe it was discussed or I missed it then and I'm paying more attention to it now because it was so thorough and so well done, yeah. But I just didn't know why we were not allowing people who'd ever been admitted as opposed to people who are not currently admitted. But yeah, I mean, it's not a big deal. I just, maybe it was discussed and I missed it. And I'm sorry if that's the case.
No, I'm not sure if it was discussed, but I'd be happy to go back, take a look at the bylaws and we can address that at the next meeting, if okay. That's okay. Okay.
Thank you.
What page is it on?
9 of 20. Like, we mean that not members of any bar, but the way it was written here, it just said shall not have been admitted rather than who are not members of any bar. And to me, that's an annoying distinction because that's, you know, how we're taught to read these things. But it does seem to eliminate people who may have in the past been a member of the bar and don't practice law anymore, but could be potential members of the board. Okay.
And you may remember, I think, Mark, we discussed that in the Regs Rules Committee, and there was some discussion because I think we did say that means if someone was a member and then, you know, let their license lapse, yeah. They couldn't be. And I think the general consensus was we wanted people who weren't practicing lawyers and hadn't been practicing lawyers just to give diversity. But
I recall the issue coming up. I just don't recall the specific because there were so many changes. I'd want to go back and take a look at the notes to make sure that we, you know, fully answer Diane's question.
Yeah, yeah. And you board, should do that, Mark. Yeah, you should do that, Mark. That's just my recollection.
Yeah.
I agree. That was what I recalled, Ellen.
Thanks, Chad.
General tenor of our discussion, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll get back to you on that, Diane. Thank you. Natalie.
Hi. Mark, thanks for your presentation. Just couple questions on the mandatory course. One question more broadly about the course, whether or not there have been any substantial changes to the course in terms of substance and content throughout. I mean, I haven't taken it since, I won't say, but it's been a while. And so that's sort of my first question. The second question is, some of the changes to the language on the amendments there, removing, I guess the bar was required to put on the mandatory course 6 times per year. That's removed. I don't know if there's been some thought about why that's being removed in terms of frequency. If the mandatory course is in person, if it's been a hybrid event, I just would like to get a little bit more information about where that program is vis-a-vis your changes.
So I don't, I'm
Mark,
sorry,
Bob, I can help out here if it's okay.
Sure.
So the mandatory course about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now, went completely on demand. We used to offer a combination of some recorded and some in person, but then when, of course, the pandemic hit, we went completely on demand. It was actually planned to go on demand before that anyway. And interestingly enough, at the request of the court, we thought that they might chafe at it, but I think they were tired of traipsing over on a monthly basis to do their part, the judges. So we made it completely on demand. So it is current. We update pieces of it periodically. For example, the pro bono center piece, we change leadership. There are new services that are offered in the rest. The core ethics content is still the same, but we periodically review the pieces of it and then update it as needed. Because with the advent of the uniform bar exam, we now have about 4,000, just under 4,000 people taking the bar every year with another more than 2,000 applying for a waiver. So an in-person administration of the mandatory course just became a mess. I mean, it really just became a mess. And before the rules changes or before this, the old bylaws, and even they had been amended, people had to come to the District of Columbia to take this thing live. And that was a huge problem for many folks. So having it on demand, having it available all the time, allows us to accommodate and also to update it in sort of real time if things change or need to be, you know, brought to current for some reason.
Thanks, Bob. That makes those changes more sensible. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob.
Any other questions for Mark? Yes, Cheyenne.
Good morning. Thank you, Mark. I just had a question in terms of, I don't know about that taking the rule with the Court of Appeals. If the board signs off on the petition, it goes to Court of Appeals. Does it come in a situation where the Court of Appeals comes back with, you know, questions as to certain changes, or it is just the question of whether the Court of Appeals will approve all the changes, proposed changes based on the petition that the board provides with? I'm not sure in terms of the procedures, basically, of what the Court of Appeals would follow in terms of adopting the proposed recommendations to the rules.
Sure. My understanding is that, I mean, the hope is that the Court of Appeals would approve all of the changes at once, subject to obviously a time for public comment. If there is, if questions are raised, you know, the committee or the board and the committee in conjunction with the board would be able to respond to those questions, but it would be subject to public comment and hopefully all the changes would be adopted by the Court of Appeals at once. That is the goal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cheyenne, for that question. Any other questions for Mark?
Okay.
Unless I am missing a hand, I think, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. This morning. My pleasure.
And for answering questions. And we look forward. I assume we will see you at the December meeting when we vote.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you to everyone.
Thank you very much, Mark. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you, Mark.